Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, please feel free to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And if you listen to this broadcast after it's been live, you can always email me if you have any questions at all. I just want to mention to you that this week my new newsletter will come out, my quarterly newsletter. So if you are not on my newsletter list, feel free to write to me also and ask to be put on. You can also find the newsletter on my gayhusbands.com blog, because I post it on there every time it comes out. It will be my holiday edition this year. And also, I wanted to mention one other thing before I introduce my special guest for tonight. I do have an online support group on Facebook, and I know a lot of people ask to join, but I'm really very particular about who's coming into this group, that we have to all be on the same page and having the same goal. So if you are interested and you have applied but you haven't been responded to, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com, and we will have to have a conversation first by phone to make sure that this is the right group for you. Without any further ado, I'm going to introduce my special guest for tonight, Susan. Susan, thank you so much for coming back to the show.
Oh, thank you, Bonnie. It's always an honor anytime I can do this for you.
Well, and it's just such a pleasure because I have many guests on the show, and each person brings a new experience and a new story that's so greatly appreciated by the several thousand listeners every month who listen to this show. I get the stats every week. and I'm just amazed that so many people listen. But, and it's from all over the world, not just from the United States, but from Europe, from Africa, Australia. I get a breakdown on every place that people are listening. And I get, you know, mail all the time from people thanking me from all over the world. And our, like I say, everybody brings a new experience to the show. But your experience, I always feel nobody can articulate this quite like you do. And that's why I love having you on the show. Because somehow you're able to, you're very welcome, articulate this. Because your story is, every story is different, and yet every story is the same. But in your case,
that's so true.
You know, it's, right?
Yeah.
It all has the same
ending,
even though they may take place differently. But for those people who may have missed Susan in our past broadcasts, I'm just going to ask you a little bit if you can talk about how your marriage unfolded and what led to the demise of your marriage.
Well, I was married before my gay husband. So I had a first marriage that I married my, basically married my high school sweetheart. We were married for 5 years. During that period of time, we had 2 children. And we split up, and there was an 11-year gap in between the breakup of that marriage and me marrying my gay husband, my gay ex-husband. And during that 11-year period of time, I dated quite a bit, and I had my heart broken a number of times. I went to a therapist who told me, explained a little bit about narcissism, but basically explained to me that the person that would be the right person for me would be the man who might not be the most handsome or the most interesting. He might not set my world on fire sexually, but that he would be sort of a steady Eddie type of guy, and I just needed that type of person, someone who I knew I could rely upon. So fast forward, you know, several more years after this therapy session, and I meet Matt. That's my ex-husband's name. His name is Matt. And I met him in a chance encounter. He was with a group of men. I was with a group of my friends. And we were both in the same vacation spot on the coast in Central California. But none of us were from there. We were just all vacationing from there. But we were all from the city that I live in, just ironically. But so we met that night, and we became instantly enamored with each other. And within a matter of, I think it was about 4 or 5 months, he moved in, and about a year and a half from the day we met, we got married, and we had the whole church wedding and the whole shebang because he had never been married before. So 2 weeks after we got married, I thought I had made a really big mistake. Little did I know what was to come. I just honestly thought he was so boring. I just can't put my finger on how boring I thought he was. And I realize now, in retrospect, and with so much, education, therapy, et cetera, that what I took for him being boring was actually disconnection. He was just disconnected from me. I was only married to be a beard for him. And even when I dragged him to counseling later on, and this is after the marriage broke up, when the therapist asked him, well, you know, why did you marry her? What did you see in her? It didn't have anything to do with me personally. You know, I loved her. I loved talking to her. Nothing like that. It had to do with she had a good job. She already owned a house. It was all very practical things that were going to serve him. But nothing about me. I could have been a nameless, faceless woman standing there. It was just what I was able to bring to the table for him. Anyway, sex with him was very mundane. But again, I would just go back to that therapist from years prior saying he's not going to set my world on fire, but this is the man who will be my very good companion, a very good, trustworthy husband that won't cheat on me, et cetera, et cetera. Within 2 years of the marriage beginning, he was not interested in sex at all. And I mean at all, at all. And keep in mind, at this time when he did not want sex, he was all of 28 years old. So it could not be poo-pooed away as though, you know, some women who've been married to their husbands for 40 years just think, well, you know, we're older. He doesn't have the sex drive anymore. Or maybe the husband has medical problems and, you know, can't perform properly. That was not the case here. He just was not interested. And no matter how many times I tried to discuss this with him, he would not discuss it. He would always say, when I asked him, why don't you want to have sex? He would always say, I don't know. And I can't tell you how many times we had this conversation because we were married another 13 years. We're married 15 years in total. And we actually went a 2.5-year period of time in this marriage with no sex at all. And I just knew there was something wrong with his sexuality, but I didn't know what. Now, again, in retrospect, I can look back and say, well, he's gay. I mean, I get it now. But in the time, you know, at the time I thought, well, maybe he had been molested and sex didn't feel good to him. Maybe he really didn't have a sex drive. At one point in time, I dragged him to the doctor for him to have his testosterone levels tested just to see if he had enough in him to even, you know, make him, you know, have any kind of a sex drive whatsoever. And at a later time in one of those frequent discussions we had, when I told him, I said, we even went in, you know, to have you tested. And that didn't do anything. And he said, well, the only reason why I did that was I thought would help my sports, because he was a marathon runner, and he's a cyclist. And he thought, oh, okay, I can do this because I might get some testosterone and, you know, it'll make me better. So had nothing to do with me. He could have cared less about me at the end of the day. Honestly, he just didn't. So the conversations would be mild, just a kind of more of a friendly, like, can we talk about this, all the way on to the opposite end where I would be screaming at him because I'd be so upset. Because when you have the same conversation over and over and over again and they're just saying, I don't know, everybody knows their sexuality. I mean, I know that there are teenagers that are confused perhaps, or when, you know, a young person's going through, you know, their hormone changes and all of a sudden they realize that they're not attracted to the opposite sex, they're attracted to the same sex. I can understand that. He knew exactly who he was the entire time, but wouldn't tell me. So I was left to think there was something wrong with me. What was I doing wrong? And because I would ask him, am I doing anything wrong? No. Do I need to look differently? I mean, how shameful is that for me to even ask that of my husband, right? Do I need to look differently for you? I think that when I look back at some of the things I asked of him, I'm really appalled by it. I mean, it just, like, I you know, what person do you want me to be in order to have a successful marriage with you? As though I had to wipe myself clean to be able to be whatever he wanted. I mean, I just look back on it in a horror. But I was in that position of just thinking, well, I've tried everything. I've pulled all the stops out. Nothing is changing this. He was not affectionate. Even in the morning, like if I left for work, he left for work, what have you, there was no kiss. There was no kiss when we got home. I even had to ask him one time. I would say, you know, Matt, other couples kiss each other goodbye in the morning. Can we kiss each other goodbye? And then that was the start of what I call the grandpa kiss in the morning, where it was just this little teensy peck on the lips and nothing more, not a hug, nothing, no intimacy and no real affection. And I was just starved for so many years. I mean, because of that lack of affection, but also feeling as though it was my fault, that I wasn't doing something right, that there was something missing in me, because he wouldn't tell me. And I even had that discussion with him. I would say, Matt, when you don't tell me why you don't want to have sex, do you realize that I have no other place to go than to blame myself? That's a normal human reaction, not a good one, but it's normal to blame myself. Do you understand that this is going on? He would not answer me. So, I mean, that's really what happened for a number of years. So basically the straw that broke the camel's back was the most heated, big discussion we ever had about the sex issue. And I pretty much lost my cool in the way that I very rarely do in my life. And I told him that I don't know what he was up to. but I knew he was up to something, and that I was going to make it my mission to find out. I would find him out because I knew he'd been lying to me, and I told him so. And a couple of days later, you know, we woke up in the morning just like every other morning. The night before, had done regular dinner, watched TV, did our normal thing. Nothing was out of the ordinary because, keep in mind, we've had these discussions probably over the 15-year marriage. Maybe we've had this discussion 50 times, maybe more than that. So, you know, we'd get in this discussion, and then everything would go back to normal, and so it did. But he just woke me up one morning, and he sat on the edge of a chair, and he said, "I just want to let you know," and these are the exact words, "I just want to let you know, when I go to work today, I will not be coming home. I want a divorce, and we're not going to discuss it." And I said, What? And I said, "Why?" And he said, and again, this is verbatim. It sounds so ridiculous, but this is exactly to the word what he said. "You don't like motorsports, and you're not supportive of my running." This was his answer. And he literally had a bad pact, and he left, and he never came back, just like he said. I was able to drag him, begrudgingly on his part, to a therapist for a total of 4 sessions, 1 with him alone, and then 3 with us together. And at the end of that 3rd session together, the therapist said to Matt, "Well, Matt, you have not told me anything that's true. I can tell you've been lying to me about everything the entire time. And in the next session that we get together, you're going to have to come clean and start telling the truth." And Matt never came back. He never went back to therapy. I came home one day from work, and there was a note up on the kitchen counter that just said a couple of different things, but one of them that is just strikes him, of course, as so memorable. As he said, "I'm not going to therapy anymore because I don't want to give you hope where there is none." And it was so painful. I can't tell you, Bonnie. It was so painful. It was my lowest moment I've ever felt in my entire life was in that moment. Of course, now I realize, again in retrospect, over the number of years that I've dealt with this situation, and again, gone through therapy, spent time with you, gone to your workshops, read all of your books, many others, been to other workshops. I could just go on. I mean, I've done everything that I can in my power to restore my life back to normal and myself back to normal, you know. Those are probably the only true words he ever spoke to me, is that he didn't want to give me hope where there was none. And I think that's probably something a lot of women need to hear, because I know initially when their husbands talk about breaking up, or they disclose that they're gay, or the woman finds out through the variety of ways they find out. We're human beings. We're used to our life. We're used to being married. We're used to sharing this household. We're used to sharing expenses in this household. And the thought of getting divorced is scarier than staying in a marriage that's bad. And that's why women stay. I mean, we know that women stay in violent, abusive marriages. They have nothing to do with him being gay, but just violent. Because we're always more afraid of the unknown than we are the known, even if the known is terrible. So I was terrified too. I mean, I just thought, I haven't been on my own now for, you know, well, by the time I got married, I think we had lived together for about 16 years, 16 and a half years, something like that. I was, you know, terrified of it. I felt just completely abandoned, which I was, in fact. But he didn't come back. He was completely gone, wasn't willing to talk about himself one iota. And to this day, of course, not one iota. And for any women that are listening that think, you know, I don't want to know, I just don't want to know, you do want to know. Because without them coming clean with you, or without actually maybe catching them in the act or what have you, you really don't get the kind of closure that you need. And I realize that them disclosing is not closure. It's an opening of another door that's going to take a long time for a woman to get closure. But he is still out there masquerading around as a straight man, even though subsequently I found all the websites he was on, all sorts of gay porn, even with younger, well, I'll call them boys. They were probably pubescent at best, all of them clean-shaven, their bodies completely clean-shaven, as was his. I found all sorts of porn sites with, that sell all the paraphernalia that men use, gay men use to have sex with each other, which is an eye-opener. If you've never seen these things, I was shocked. I thought I didn't know how many objects are made to do this. It's kind of mind-boggling. And I was so disgusted, and there were so many of them, that I just realized I was just living in the dark the entire time. And the entire time he was taking business trips, or I was taking a business trip, everybody always said to me, you guys have the best marriage because you just let him go on a business trip. It's not a big deal. Or you can go and he doesn't think it's a big deal. I mean, most men would be really possessive and they wouldn't want their wives to go on a business trip for a week or 2 weeks. And he's really good with it. Well, yeah, he's great with it because he had an entire life on the side that he gets to enjoy without fear of being caught, without me being physically present. And I mean, I know of three different men that he had affairs with. One of them, he even wanted us to move so he could live by him. Of course, it was disguised as a business opportunity, even though this business opportunity would have made him no more money than what he was already making. And we would have had to move to a different city, sell our house, and me quit my job. So there you go. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, what happened. It has now been 10 years. I can't even believe it's been this long. It was 10 years in October from the day he left. And it has been, I have had some good things happen in these 10 years. I've had some good things happen in my family. I became a grandmother, which was wonderful. It was a blessing not bestowed on everybody, so I consider myself very lucky. But the emotional toll it took on me over the last 10 years, I would not wish on anybody. I just would not wish on anybody. Somebody could tell me, Susan, I will give you $10 million to go back 10 years and relive it over again. During the 10 years, you will not know we've ever had this discussion. You'll have to go through every moment of that 10 years again, and I would not do it. It was so excruciatingly painful. It was the knowing I lived in a lie for so many years, just being lied to, just the fraud involved, the anger of that. It was the abandonment, which, I mean, just was devastating to me. His lack of ability to discuss it with me, so no closure, no nothing. It was really tough because I had to do all this work essentially by myself with no information. And I fortunately found a second therapist who was really terrific, and we did some trauma therapy that was helpful. I mean, none of this is a catch-all. It's, you know, it's a process. You take it one day at a time, and you just keep getting up every morning, and you keep going to work or whatever it is that you do, and you just keep doing it. And it's the hardest thing in the world sometimes just to even get dressed or to take a shower. And unfortunately, I know a lot of women listening right now can relate to this. Days where I just couldn't eat at all. I ended up with a form of anorexia, and I apologize. I'm forgetting the type of anorexia it is now. It's not anorexia bulimia where you throw up because you think you're overweight, not that. It's an emotionally driven form of anorexia, which you can't control, where you feel like you're full all the time. And when you try to swallow something, you feel like you're going to throw it back up because there's no room in your stomach. And it's all emotionally caused in the brain. It has to do with trauma and panic and adrenaline and all sorts of other things. And it was really difficult for me to eat anything at all for the first, I would say, 4 months after he left. And I was probably about a week away from having to go into the hospital for it because I'd lost so much weight that I didn't even know what size I was anymore, but I couldn't sit on a chair or lay in a bathtub because of my bones. I just was bones, and it was painful. Just to sit in a car to drive anywhere was so excruciatingly painful, to sit on my pelvic bones and my tailbone. And that's why my therapist told me And this was the first one. He just said, seriously, I've talked to someone about you, and we're going to have to admit you next week unless you do something. And I remember vividly sitting up at the kitchen counter telling myself I was going to eat a half a banana. I said, you're going to do this, and you're going to sit here until you eat a half a banana, because I was terrified. I didn't know what was going on with me. I was just mentally, I was a mess. And I made myself do it, and slowly I got back to normal. But it just hit me in a traumatic way that I just never thought I would experience trauma like that. The only thing I could think in my life that would be worse, traumatic for me, would be losing my children, which unfortunately I know you know all too well, Bonnie. So you could relate to that you know, depth of feeling. But I just wouldn't wish this upon anybody. And there's not a solution to it except for to work on yourself and to get out of it. The longer a woman stays in it, the more damage it does to her. Until the point, I think a lot of women are just incapacitated, and they just feel like they can't do anything. You know what I mean? So
I just want to go back and go over some of the things with you, Susan, because your story is just so moving all the time to me. But I do want to go back and bring up some points that you have brought up. So let's go back to when you first met Matt. And, you know, you'd been told by a therapist, don't look for those bad boys that he used to like, and, you know, the good-looking ones that are just out to use you. For those people who have never met Susan before, I've been blessed to meet her a number of times. Susan is a beautiful woman. I mean, she could pose as a Barbie doll, so let's be real clear on that. Well, I'm being honest, Susan.
Bonnie's exaggerating just a bit. Let me tell
you. No, I don't. No, trust me when I tell you that. And so, you know, Susan's a beautiful woman, so she would attract a lot of men. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of men would want her because she's a beautiful woman, not only inside but outside. So she's picking out Matt. Now, how long did you know him before you got married?
A year and a half.
Okay. Now, looking back in retrospect, were there any red flags before you got married?
We had sex before we got married, and it wasn't the best. It wasn't the worst. I mean, I know a lot of straight wives don't have a lot of sexual experience. They married very young, or they were, you know, religious, and so they waited until they got married, and they don't really have a comparison. They don't have anybody to compare it to or any other sexual experiences, I guess, they could say to compare it to, and I certainly did. And Matt was not even in the ballpark of what I would say the sex drive and just the passion and the connection and all of that of a regular heterosexual man. But I didn't think there was anything wrong with him sexually. I just thought, again, that he was boring. And so, again, when I look in retrospect, I realize it was really disconnection. He just didn't want to be with a woman. He went through the paces because that's what he had to do to, you know, to get what he wanted. I think when I look back, a red flag to me now is that he went through college and it took him 7 years to get out of college. And I don't know why, I just dragged his feet. And I asked him how many girlfriends he had had in college. And he said, none. I said, none. I mean, 7 years of college, you would have at least had one, maybe two, maybe more. I don't know. Why didn't you have a girlfriend? And he said, I just think that college girls are just too young and immature. I just didn't really like them too much. And I bought it. And I said, well, I mean, did you have sexual experiences? Or, I mean, if you didn't have a girlfriend, did you take people out, maybe have sex with them for a while, but you were never boyfriend and girlfriend? Did you do anything like that? And his answer to that was, oh, well, I, you know, took so-and-so to a fraternity out-of-town thing, da-da-da-da-da. Well, I, you know, find out much, much later, this was just a platonic friend. There was no romance involved at all, and he just took her to make it look like he had a date. But, you know, back then, before I married him, I thought that, you know, he was taking her up and having a sexual relationship with her, so I didn't know. But so now, that would be a massive red flag, because a young man in his 20s, you know, starting out college at 18 and through his 20s, is going to be having sex with someone somewhere. Again, unless he is of a religious persuasion that doesn't permit it, and they, you know, they live their life that way. They're going to want to have sex, and most of them are, in fact, going to have sex. And he just, no, I, you know, he just didn't have a girlfriend. So that, I would say, was a red flag. I think a big red flag for me now when I look back is, you know how you can remember certain points and times in your life when you're having a discussion and you can remember where you were. You can even remember what the weather was like, what you were wearing. I mean, something that, that resonates with you that way. We were walking across this big lawn, and I asked him if he had ever gotten his heart broken in his life. And his answer to that was no, but it was the way he said it. It was a very snarky no, like, why would I get my heart broken? Are you kidding? No. And I realize now that, of course, he's not going to get his heart broken because he's not capable of getting his heart broken. And the damage caused to me was partially by the fraudulent marriage, but I would say two-thirds of it was caused by the narcissism, because at the end of the day, he turned out to just be a narcissistic sociopath that did not care. And those types of people can't get their heart broken because they don't actually love people. People serve a purpose for them, but they don't actually have love for them like you or I would love someone, where they mean something to us, where they're a part of us. So we, you know what I'm saying, Bonnie? So that
I
would
do.
Be
I just, I, another thing I want to bring up that you mentioned, you know, when you talk about women who go through this and that, you know, it's hard to break away and because it's a fear of the unknown, I would like to bring up this fact that when you went into this marriage, did you feel you're a very different person than when you came out of this marriage? Because
that's a good question.
Down so much emotionally that, you know, I know for myself, the person I was when I went into my marriage to my gay husband was certainly not the person I turned into by living with my gay husband. Because I turned into someone who was unrecognizable.
Yes, I would say that. I would definitely say that. I lost a lot of my identity. I lost a lot of myself in the process. I remember vividly, you know, sitting in a company meeting, the company I worked for, and they were talking about what do you want for the future? And they weren't talking about our job. They were just talking about in general. And I had a complete blank slate, just blank. There was nothing there. There was nothing there. I had lost. I hope I can articulate this correctly. I have lost my ability to see in the future. I had lost joy. I didn't have anything that I looked forward to. Nothing. There was. I felt like I had been gutted. And I think that happened just because maybe I had to be like that to cope, like shut off emotion in order just to cope. I don't really know, but all I can say is that I felt like I was an empty shell.
After the
last, I felt like I had been hollowed out of everything, of the ability to laugh, to enjoy anything. I couldn't. I just didn't have it in me. I can't explain it. A client of mine said to me, "Susan, someday you'll hear the birds sing again." And I'll never forget that, because when I was in that state, I didn't hear the birds singing. I think it's probably a result of trauma, of him walking out. And that's all I can, you know, think about it. But I was just empty, and it's taken me this last 10 years to get. I don't want to say back to the person I was, because every experience we have in our life, especially one like this, it's going to change who you are. So I'm not the person today that I was when I went into that marriage. I'm not that person at all. I think in many ways I'm a better person. I think that's probably because I walk through life more now with my eyes open to what's around me and the people around me, and I have a deeper, I can recognize pain in other people more easily. I could be standing in the line at the grocery store, and I can just look at a person who's not saying anything, we're not having conversation, and I can tell that they're in some kind of pain, emotional pain. I know sometimes I'm not treated well with my clients, and I know it probably comes from emotional pain. So I think being able to tap into that for other people is good. Because people need help all the time. Life is tough. People need help. And you and I were chatting about this whole COVID thing prior to, you know, the radio show going live here, and the isolation that so many people feel because of COVID, being stuck in their homes, not being able to see their loved ones, not being able to travel, not being able to even go to a hospital if even their husband or their wife or their partner or their child, whatever, you know what I'm saying, is in the hospital. Uh-huh. All these types of things that have created an even deeper isolation for women that are already feel so isolated. Because you can have 50 friends when you find out this has happened with your husband, but if none of them have had this experience, they are not going to get it. They're not going to get it at all. And you're going to feel very, very, very alone, which is the reason for
right.
the radio
show. And I think that this is such a unique experience. I agree. This is such a unique experience that unless you've lived it, you don't understand it. And I think people tend to be judgmental to us, you know, when they find out about it. You know, everybody has something to say, not in front of our face, behind our backs, such as, how could she not know? Why was she so stupid? Right. Why did she stay for so long? She saw there was something wrong. Why did she keep putting more time in? What was wrong with her? You know, the blame comes to us, even though, does that happen? Do you agree with that?
Well, I think it does, and I think there's just simply a lot of ignorance in the public of this entire dynamic and what it does to people. I mean, the most common thing that people will say to a woman is, "Oh, well, at least he didn't leave you for another woman," as though that provides some kind of solace.
When in fact,
you feel worse about that because I mean, neither one of those situations is good. I certainly don't want to even allude to the fact that if a man leaves his wife for another woman, that's a walk in the park because it's devastating for those women too, but just in a different way. I mean, you know, they certainly have a whack to their self-esteem in a major way because of that. But I don't think that people understand that there is it's like a slow, constant drip away of the self-esteem of a woman when she's in a marriage with a gay husband. And it's happened so slowly, and over a period of time, they don't even know what's happening. They just get to a point, again, I've talked to enough of them, where they just feel sort of numb, and they feel like they've been chipped away at. And I know for several years before Matt left, I felt helpless. I felt hopeless. I even remember asking a friend of mine who looked at me in horror. She had no idea what I was talking about. I said, "How do you know when your life is over?" She said, "What do you mean?" I said, "How do you know if you've done everything you're supposed to do and it's time for you to die?" And she said, "I don't even know what you're asking me." But that's how I felt. I felt, because I felt so hopeless. I could feel no happiness, no joy. I didn't think there was anything ahead of me to look forward to. Again, there was nothing in my life that brought me joy. I was just going through the motions of life, getting up, going to work, coming home, just going through the motions of life. And obviously very unfulfilled and didn't know my way out of that because I didn't know the cause of it. And I didn't know that until after Matt left. So in a horribly full circle way, Matt leaving the way he did, ultimately, as horrific as it was a gift for me because I probably would have never left that marriage. I probably would have once I caught him, which I would have at some point, but I didn't at the time he left. I had not caught him yet, but I felt like my life was worthless, simply worthless, because of just being treated as though I was worthless. And, you know, as women, we put a lot of stake into how we're treated by men, by how we are treated. Well, again, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad or otherwise, it just is. We put a lot of stock in how we're treated by our husbands or our boyfriends or, you know, even young teenage girls, you know, who want to commit suicide over their 14-year-old boyfriend who dumped them for another girl. I mean, women have a certain sensibility about them where a lot of them just are that way, which is the way it is. And we give our souls to them, literally. And I think that's pretty much what I did. I didn't realize
that. Well, things that happens, that we do. I always say that straight wives are the best wives because we try so hard to fix something so broken that can never be fixed, and yet we just keep running around like, in a circle of crazy, as I call it, going around and around and around and going nowhere because these marriages can't, nothing can happen to go in a positive direction, which is why I tell women, right?
Yeah.
The other thing is that now in retrospect, when you're looking back now, I know you've learned a lot over the years because you've made it your business to learn everything. I tell women that, in fact, I'm writing about this in my upcoming newsletter this week, that women think that I'm with my husband all the time. He couldn't possibly be doing anything because how could he do it? I'm with him all the time. I tell women that it only takes a minute for them to be with somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Am I right?
Oh, for sure. And they're not with you all the time. Even if it might feel like that at times, they're not with you all the time. They say, honey, I need to go to the hardware store.
Exactly.
I need to go get the oil changed in my car. I need to go help my parents put up Christmas lights. I can give you a whole list of things that my husband no doubt used as a means to get out of the house to go meet someone and have some kind of a hookup. It can happen right under your nose and you don't know it. It's so interesting. So many people just think, assume that because a man is married to a woman, then he's not gay. And they'll still say that to me. Oh, well, he's not gay. He's married. And I'll look at them and just give them this look of, are you kidding me? You don't know now how many millions of women around the planet are married to gay men and have no idea. And we still, certainly not near you, but the general population believes if they're married, they're not gay. I have a lot of gay clients, a lot of gay male clients. I have a lot of gay female clients too, but gay male clients, and they have told me, they just said, Susan, you just don't understand. I can go to the church picnic, and I'll have, if there's 100 men there with their wives and their kids, at least 3 or 4 of them will try to hit me up while I'm at the picnic. Do I want to meet later? Do I want to go in the bathroom? Can we go out to your car and get something? All in the means of trying to have sex with them. And these are the church deacons and the elders. They're married. They have 3 kids. And oh my goodness, the stories that I have heard. It just makes my skin crawl when I hear about it because there's a woman who has no idea what's going on. She just has no idea. And I have a couple of clients right now that are married with children, and I flat out know that they're gay. I'm not speculating. I know that they're gay, and they're living this fraudulent life, and it's just so difficult for me to even have a conversation with them because I want to come across their desk and strangle them for what they're doing to another human being, and it's just so appalling to me. So, yeah.
I agree, because I tell stories in my upcoming newsletter about this. I talk about men who have told me their stories. I've met these men. And when they tell me what they do, I'm just like, it's just so unbelievable to me. But that's why women are so naive, as I used to be. I'm the first to say it. But I always say to women that your thermometer has to be this. Men are very sexual by nature. If they are not having sex with you, they are having sex with someone else. That has to be your starting pretense.
Yeah.
Because especially you were saying, he was 28 years old. At 28 years old, all a guy is thinking about is sex. So if he's not thinking about it with you, he's doing it with somewhere else, right?
Well, it is, and it's painful. It's absolutely true, and it's very painful to hear. But just because it's painful doesn't mean we shouldn't really have a deep understanding of that because it is reality. And the longer we keep our heads in the sand, because we try to avoid certain things because it's painful. I mean, there was a period of time near the end of my marriage where Matt had a home office, and actually so did I. But we were gone on and off, what have you. But I would walk by his office door, and he would suddenly exit out of whatever he was watching on his computer. And this happened repeatedly over and over and over again when I would walk past the door or walk in the room. And so there were several times where I would tiptoe down the hall. I knew that there was something there. I was terrified to see it, though, of what it was, because I knew it wasn't going to be good. So I think sometimes we just go, oh, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter, because we don't want to deal with it. I mean, we know ultimately if we catch our husbands with someone else that the marriage is going to be over and we're terrified of that happening. We don't want it to happen. It's not our fault. Why should our marriage end when we think we've done, you know, we're not flawless people by any means, but we've tried to be a good wife and done the right things. Why should I be penalized by losing my marriage and my income level, or my have to share custody of my children, or all those other things that come with divorce when it's not my fault? So I'm just going to put my head in the sand, not find out, and that way I can just keep going the way I'm going. And what it does is, and I'm sure your straight wives have told you this, the longer the woman stays in that marriage, the harder it is for them to recover. And some never do, because they spent so much time in that marriage. Talk about not knowing who you are anymore. They start out at 75 years of age, having found out that a 50-year marriage was a fraud. And I just can't even imagine what that must feel like. I can't even wrap my arms around what that must feel like for women to know that it, basically her life was you know, fraudulent. So that is going back to what we're saying about a man leaving for another man, or a man leaving for another woman, or a man leaving for nobody, but the marriage is breaking up because she found out that he was gay or suspects he's gay or you know, what have you. Is a woman who's been married to a man who leaves for another woman doesn't have to go through the rest of her life thinking that her marriage was a fraud. It ended badly, and there are parts of it that weren't good, but it wasn't a complete fraud. They probably had many years where it was good, and he did love her, and he was attracted to her, and he did treat her well. And I think with a straight wife, the problem is you don't know what's real, and you don't know what's not. And I said that to Matt in therapy. I said, I don't know what memories to keep and which to throw away. And even the therapist said, well, you know, your memories are still your memories. I go, but my memories are based on thinking he's a straight man as opposed to a gay man. Because a gay man and a straight man are going to think differently about everything. So what I thought we had in common, I don't know if I can articulate this well at all. What I thought we had in common, we probably didn't have in common at all. And he was just kind of going along with, you know, going through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I use this as an example. I was lucky enough to be able to go to Italy with my husband, and we were standing there staring at a statue of David. So we're looking at the David, and of course he's this, you know, Adonis-like sculptural hunk of a man. And I think back now as I'm standing there looking, like, what was my husband thinking when he was looking at him? What was my husband thinking of that statue when he was staring at it like I was? He was probably thinking
the same thing that you were thinking.
Exactly. Right. You know, so, I mean, that's just an example of our memories are based upon not only what we thought was happening in any given moment, but what we thought our spouse was enjoying something or whatever in that moment. And you just realize that you just don't even know what's real, and you don't know what's not real. And it's very heartbreaking, and it can really undo you for quite a while, and maybe permanently if you let it. I mean, unfortunately, even though it's not our fault, it still ends up being our work to get ourselves back on track again. You know, it's unfair. I was mad a lot of times when I went to therapy. I don't deserve to be here. Why are we here? Why did you put me in this position where I had to be in therapy with you? This is just not fair at all. So I was mad a lot of the time. I was really mad. I'm not as angry now as I used to be. I'm still angry. I'll probably always be angry because he didn't have a right to do what he did and how he treated me when he left, and his complete just disregard for me as though I never mattered. Just never mattered. Didn't matter anymore. but never mattered. He alluded to that in therapy, that he never cared about me. He wasn't concerned about me. He didn't care. And that's a blow. It's a hard blow. It's very sad is what it is. I think that his life, though, ultimately is much more sad than mine, because he has to live a fake life and terrified that somebody's going to find out every single day. And at least I can live my life honestly and out in the open and be who I am. Of course, he's a narcissist. He's a sociopath, so he probably doesn't feel bad about that. I don't know.
I'm sure he doesn't. So that's the whole point. They don't feel bad about it. So, you know, we have to just worry about ourselves, because we can't worry about people who don't even know how to have the compassion and the empathy to worry about us. When you were going through all of this over those years, Susan, I just wanted to ask you, did any of your friends or family say, Susan, there's something really wrong with you, that you're not yourself?
With me?
Yes.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I mean, after Matt left, absolutely. I mean, they all knew.
No,
I mean,
before
they all knew that I was. Oh, before he left? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. My friends said that I would isolate a lot, and that I couldn't be reachable by phone. I wouldn't return their calls, and I'd kind of go into hiding for months at a time. I was very depressed. I just felt like there was a doomsday coming for me, but I didn't know what it was. And in fact, there was, but I didn't know what it was. I just felt like something was on the edge of happening that was really, really bad. I had this sense. But again, I had not the slightest inkling what it was. But I walked through life like that, again, joyless, and thinking that this all had to come to an end, some way, somehow. And I talked to a few of my friends about that. Some friends could not understand what I was talking about. The others said, I think you need to go into therapy. They all understood it. But after Matt left, they certainly got it. Speaking of Matt, my younger sister later told me in the, you know, 6 months or so after Matt left and discovering all the websites and going into great detail with her about all these discussions, she said, well, you know, I have something to confess. And I said, what? She said, well, John and I, that's her husband, thought he was gay when you were dating him. And we had a discussion about telling you, but you seemed to be so happy that we didn't want to say anything. And she started crying. She was really upset. She said, this is my fault. And they said, no, this is not your fault. People make the best decision in the moment of what they think. And people are always afraid to be wrong, too. They don't want to say something that might create a rift in a relationship, and it's not true. And she just said, I'm just so sorry. But, you know, I look back and go, well, how come I didn't see that? And I don't know why I didn't see that. But she said, we just thought he was. One of my other good friends said, well, my husband and I thought he was gay too. We thought he was very effeminate, and how he groomed himself, just how he spoke sometimes. There were aspects of him that were just, we would question it, but we would just say, nah, Susan's smarter than that. She'd know better than that. Well, no. No. So
that makes you feel even worse. I mean, you know, it's not like bad enough you have to live it, but then you have to think that people think that you were stupid enough to stay in it. And I think that people just don't understand this, because once again, why would we think a gay man wants to marry us? That's number one. Number two, you had sex with him, you know, early in the game. It wasn't the best sex, but it was still sex, you know, if he were gay.
Right.
Why would he be having sex with a straight woman? So there's all these confusing messages that how would we know? You know, and I always say that. Why do people think we should know what we can't know? Right?
Absolutely. I agree with that. And I think sometimes, and this is just my theory, and it could be complete bunk, but I think that there are women sometimes that will blame the other woman and say, well, there must have been something wrong with her. She wasn't this or she wasn't that enough or whatever enough, right? Because I think at the end of the day, if they're married and they think this could possibly happen to me, that is not a thought they want to entertain. So it's easier to say there was something wrong with Susan or Susan wasn't good enough or pretty enough or whatever enough. And that's why he left. Because if they have to say, well, this shit happens, pardon my language, but this shit happens, where the husband that you think you know is unrecognizable, and Matt became unrecognizable after he left. He wasn't that recognizable when I was married to him, but after he left, I didn't even know who he was. He finally had this freedom when he left to, like, be his real self, and I remember even looking at him, and funny, it was creepy. This look in his eyes, I cannot explain it, but I knew I was looking at a different human being. And I know it sounds crazy, like I'm losing my mind, but I have a visual of him sitting in that chair, and the pupils in his eyes that were he had blue eyes, they were dilated so wide that his eyes looked almost black. It was creepy. It was just the scariest, you know, thing. But yeah, that's why we have to support each other, because there's not a lot of support out there in the open world who gets this at all or has compassion for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can understand it, but they might not have compassion for you at all, and they say, snap out of it. Get on with it.
Well, that's the other thing I want to say to you. You know, a lot of women feel very pressured by outside influences. What's taking you so long to get past this? Why can't you just get over it? Why don't you just move on in your life?
Okay.
I always say that people who are strict, they get divorced. And, yes, there could be one at fault, one that's not at fault, one who's maybe it's just a bad match, maybe they got married young. You know, so they break up and their lives do go on. They do get remarried. They do meet new partners. These marriages are so different. I mean, these are years of being stripped naked of everything you have as far as self-esteem, sexual esteem, questioning yourself, being gaylighted, as I call it. They call it gaslighted.
Yes.
Where you're being told you're crazy every minute. I call it gaylighting because it's a gay man making you think you're crazy. You know, you go through all these different kinds of things that straight people don't go through. So, you know, it's easy to snap out of it, right?
You don't snap out of it. You certainly don't. I mean, there was a period of time for years where I really wanted to walk around with like a pocket recorder and record all of our conversations, because he would say they didn't happen, or I was remembering it wrong, or I didn't say I was going here. I said I was going there. I said, no, you vividly said you were going there. Because, you know, when people lie, it's hard to remember lies. It's easy to remember the truth because it's the truth. But lies, you can't keep it straight sometimes. So, yeah, that is part of what creates a very different outcome of the breakup of this marriage versus a woman who has not been gaslighted. It is a very different
thing. You're in a straight marriage.
Yourself.
You were in a straight marriage, and so was I.
Yeah.
I was in a straight marriage before my gay husband, so I knew what, you know, a straight marriage was about. But it's totally different, even though it fell apart. It fell apart under different kinds of circumstances. So, you know, people don't get it. They just don't. But, Susan, I can't believe we're coming to the end of the hour. And, you know, I'm just hoping you'll come back in the spring. Yeah, when you come back in the spring, I really want to talk about that as far as the recovery period, why it takes so much longer, the steps we have to go through, if you don't mind. You know, so when we do the spring sessions. I really appreciate it, Susan. And I just want to tell all our listeners. Yeah, I want to wish all our listeners a wonderful holiday this week. And I know it's not easy for a lot of people. I call it the horror days are now starting. The days from Thanksgiving to Valentine's Day. All those family-oriented holidays where you have to be reminded of what you don't have. But I'm there for support.
Yeah.
If you need my help, just drop me a note. You want to talk? I'm here to talk. So, Susan, thank you so much. You know I love you. I'm so blessed to have met you through my travels here. And I will be talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much for all you do for everybody. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Sure.
All right, to all our listeners.
My honor.
Thank you, Susan. So to all of our listeners, have a wonderful week, and we'll be back next week. Have a good week. Good night.